Welcome, everyone. This is Beth Vonney from the IPED team. Delighted to bring you some new research this morning that we have completed just earlier this summer and presented here at our General Leadership Forum in the fall, and I'm delighted to be able to bring it to you today. I am leader of our research efforts within IPED and also one of our senior consultants, so I'm close to this not only at the data level but also in terms of how it applies in practice to a lot of programs and go-to-market strategies. So thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in. This is a highly popular topic, as you might expect, the focus on the managed service provider business model, not only because they are growing in numbers and strategic value, but supporting them, of course, looks a little bit different than traditional VAR and SI models. So, again, body research that was done earlier in the summer that we're going to kind of walk through today. And I think as we move into this, as usual, I'll just leave this quote in front of you because I think it sort of embodies the enthusiasm and big opportunity that many managed service providers see in the market and get started. So not only edge devices, but data center services, infrastructure and apps, IoT, cloud and SaaS applications, this whole kind of universe of legacy technology and emerging technology coming together and being delivered as a service is indeed the holy grail of business model right now for a lot of people building an MSP practice. So before we jump into the data, I just want to take a quick pulse here. I have a quick poll here on the screen. I'd love if you could just take a second and kind of tell me where you are in your own maturity level of looking at managed services as a business model and or a separate partner type in your programs. You can go ahead and choose one of these. I think we've got most folks. Maybe a couple more votes. Okay, I think we've got most people. Let's see how this looks. So, okay, so many of you have a newer program offering or support services, but they're newer in your program still evolving as opposed to a mature separate program or track. Good to know. Okay, so as we go through this, we'll talk about certainly support expectations and engagement models from the MSP community back to the vendors, but at the beginning, as you might be aware, we often start with kind of an overview of just the market segmentation in general. So thank you for sharing your current state with us here. So let's look at this, both the research here, and to some extent, a analogy to the broader segmentation in the market we see for MSPs. This is a North American view. This data was primarily North America-focused. And you can see we've sort of broken the MSP community in three ways. There's a lot of different ways we could segment MSPs based on whether they buy the gear, whether they just manage it, the customers they serve, the kind of environments and assets they manage, size, staff, whole bunch of things. But we thought it was most important to line them up based on the customers they serve and where the customers are in their on-prem to cloud and infrastructure to app sort of journey. So as with many of our studies, the majority of the sort of broader solution provider community here is small focused organizations, right? 10 million or smaller, primary business model coming from legacy break fix hardware or VAR routes, but the current business model is such that MSP is now a primary go-to-market model. And it's more than 50% of the revenue. So they've kind of gone all in to the recurring revenue business model. They are primarily supporting small business, and they do manage both a combination of on-premise and public cloud assets with a heavy push towards becoming more and more all cloud focused. And we'll talk more about that as we go through. We kind of call these guys virtual CIOs. And you'll see in cuts of the data, the orientation and attitudes of the MSP community cut along these three dimensions. So the middle segment, just that sort of tends to be mid-market focused, tends to have it as a secondary business model. They're coming from SI or sometimes VAR routes. Again, catering to the mid-market, but their combination of assets they're managing are both on-prem and those in their own data center. So this is where we started to see the investment in their own NOC or security operations center or data center. It's about a quarter of the participants. And then in the big guys, right, this is the solution provider 500 classic large national or multi-regional integrators, many of whom have had a dedicated hosting business or outsourcing business, where this is a practice area. Providing managed services is a practice area. It's not a primary business model, sometimes not even a secondary business model, but it's very much integrated to how they're growing. They cater to enterprise businesses, and then they really do manage all three environments. They manage on-premise gear, public cloud, and their own data center assets. And you'll see what the mix of the revenue looks like there. So, again, just kind of a high-level view of looking at how important managed services is to these three types, who they serve, and where they're aligning their go-to-market strategy around managed services. At a high level, this is sort of how we look at the legacy approach to providing managed services in the IT channel and what we think it looks like going forward. So today is really sort of today and the past. And, you know, the arrows and attributes on the bottom really speak to a very infrastructure-specific, cost-savings-specific, on-premise-specific sort of approach to providing managed services. Limited pre-sales architecture design feeding a managed contract. And kind of static offering here, classic disaster recovery backup, network monitoring, device as a service, fixed sort of static offerings. Whereas we think the model in the future is already moving pretty aggressively towards, you know, an end-to-end approach to managed services, inclusive of on-prem cloud, of course, but then their own assets, both infrastructure and apps focused, and really getting core IT infrastructure in a predictable, almost subscription-based model such that the majority of the assets can be moved towards real innovation through technology, automating new business processes, creating new custom apps, really sort of taking IT to the next level. So we see that the investments in the direction of the business with the solution providers moving in this direction fairly aggressively. And so I just wanted to give you a landscape and a view of where we think this is going at a macro level. So let's just sort of look at what that, how that comes to life in the data. So in this particular study, there were kind of four main themes, four major takeaways. And we're just going to kind of quickly go through each one. The first is that orientation to where do the assets live, and how does that dictate the way that the partners are monetizing their managed services today and their delivery models. Clearly, the bet here is hybrid is kind of the new default. So we'll show you a little bit more detail around that. The second idea is, what is that balance between applications and infrastructure services? Where is it helping them create higher margins, but then also better market differentiation among what is now a very broad set of managed service delivery companies? Third idea is around how critical automation is in two ways, both in terms of their scale and efficiency of delivering, you know, multiple managed services, but then more importantly to you, how they're using integration to their automation platforms to run the managed service business as a key criteria for which technologies they're going to support in a managed environment at all. So it's both how do I run the business, but then how do I integrate technology into my manager platform? So we'll look at that in a little bit of detail. And then the fourth idea is just really kind of where the rubber hits the road with you and your programs. What kind of sales and marketing support do they need? Where do they have the skills gap? As you might expect here, there's a big theme that continues around talent acquisition and access to marketing funds when they are no longer a traditional transactional type of partner. So those are the kind of the four themes we're going to just touch on, and I'll give you some sort of supporting data in each one. So let's start with the delivery models and the environments they're managing. So here are the four delivery models we look at. On the left-hand side is where their preference for the majority of the assets they manage and how they manage services today on the left. And then on the right is where they see the fastest growth going forward. So hopefully the four delivery models are described fairly cleanly, but let me just quickly go through it. Managed only is just that. They only manage the assets. They don't own the assets. The customer owns the assets in whatever number of locations they may exist. But the main IP from the partner is the services management process. Owned and managed is that. They own the assets themselves, either in their own facility or in a co-location facility to their spec, and then they provide the management service. Resale is where they're reselling a managed service just like they'd sell any other product. Could be a public cloud offering, could be a security service, could be a disaster recovery backup service, but it's not theirs. They're just managing the customer and transacting. And the white label is the variation on resale when they're selling multiple managed services platforms or providers offerings, and they brand it as their own, and they provide some level of, you know, provisioning, billing, and uptime services around it without literally owning the assets. So both today and then going forward, you can see the number one preferred model by the highest majority of partners is, or at least in the top two, is managed only. And you'll see in a second why that is. There's still an aversion for many providers to put a big investment of CapEx into their own gear for competitive reasons, for access to capital reasons, et cetera. So management only has been a very lucrative and sort of low-risk model for them. But going forward, you can see owned and managed has sort of come back into the forefront. And we think that that's, you know, for a variety of reasons mentioned there. You know, they get to have more control. They optimize their gross margins. They can, you know, build the spec as they see it most viably in the market. They can choose their own brands. And then another thing that came out of the interviews is that where they are building their own infrastructure, again, it's with a heavy emphasis around a security operations center. So if they're going to build it anywhere, they're going to build it to differentiate security services. So just kind of a landscape in terms of how they are going to market and how they package and sort of deliver their services. And here's the underlying data behind that, right? So today, the most frequent location for the assets is on customer prem for all three profiles of NSP. Second is, you know, tied between in their own data center or in a public cloud facility. So you see public cloud assets are still sort of nascent today, higher, of course, with enterprise-focused MSPs. But when you look at how this projects forward, still, on-customer prem assets are expected to have the highest occurrence. So this is the percentage of revenues. This is most frequent location for where they expect the assets to exist in the future. But look at the growth in public cloud. Right? So all three are up significantly from today's model. And the highest rate of growth is in the small business and then the mid-market-focused providers models. So it's not just for enterprise companies anymore. This really becomes kind of a paradigm for all profiles and customer orientations of MSP going forward. As it relates to this in their own managed NOC or data center, and again, this is the partner's own, the second column here in the co-location facility is the customer's co-location facility, right? So the difference between customer-owned and partner-owned. But for those that are not going to invest in their own infrastructure, which is about two-thirds of everyone in this study, so a third are going to invest, two-thirds are not, this is why they're not. I alluded to this a moment ago, right? Biggest response is, I don't have the capital or the OPEX, and capital investment doesn't seem to be a good investment for me, given other things I may be spending money on. When you talk to them, many of them will also indicate, of course, that depending on what markets they serve, their ability to compete with the big infrastructure providers, AWS, Azure, so on, directly is daunting to them. So they're choosing to not spend their money there. The co-location provider or partnership over there on the far left is, I think, more common than this data might allude to, because I think when you talk to them, there's actually more teaming happening here than might normally be presenting itself in this research. So it's their spec, but it's owned at a co-location facility, or it's kind of mutually in between the customer and the partner in that colo facility. So something to kind of watch for. You know, I think that the interesting thing programmatically here is that if they aren't buying the gear for their own data center, their own NOC or SOC or data center, and they're not transacting it as a VAR would to place on the customer's premise, you know, for the customer to own, but they're just influencing the customer choosing the right brands or the right configuration, they kind of fall off your transactional radar screen. Right? They're not selling through, they're just a big influencer. So if you don't have a big influence tracking model, it's very common for fairly sophisticated and influential MSPs to just not register in your programmatic, you know, trackers. So something to think about when we're talking about MDF and other incentives, which we'll talk about at the end. So for the part of that business, that sort of 20, 25%, sometimes 30% that is public cloud, here's the preference to cloud providers today. So the question was asked, for assets that are in a public cloud environment, which do you prefer to support the most? So probably not a big surprise that small and mid-sized market companies have the highest preference around supporting Azure environments, if for no other reason than, you know, Microsoft has hundreds of thousands of, you know, traditional VARs selling legacy Microsoft gear and online services around the world. They've had a very effective campaign of sort of transitioning them to selling the online service suite and then ultimately the Azure platform. But AWS's highest propensity here among providers is with the enterprise-focused providers here in the black columns. And then over here on the right, that there's still like less than 20% that are not supporting a public cloud environment or assets at all. That has definitely shrunk over the last 3 to 5 years. But some of them would just tell you, like, it's just not consistent with my business model. It's not in high demand for my customers yet. You know, they have data integrity concerns where they have a strong aversion to the cloud, et cetera. So it's still there, and I think it will continue to be there, but we continue to think it'll be, you know, 10 to 15% of the population over time. So brand preference for cloud providers. Okay, so that's how they are delivering services, where the assets lie, and how much they're on-prem versus cloud-based. Now let's look at the composition of the services specifically. As you might expect, application services are still the minority of where they're making money today in a managed environment. The most two-thirds are infrastructure-focused, even a little bit higher on infrastructure for small business-focused MSPs, whereas enterprise-focused MSPs tend to be a little bit more deeply into the application layer. However, when you ask them where they expect the growth going forward, they actually see relatively comparable growth in application-related services versus infrastructure. And you'll see here in a minute, in part, that is because some of the more core infrastructure services are already fairly well commoditized. So this is a ranking here on the left of the most profitable managed services they're selling today. So this is not highest demand. It's where they're making the most money. You can see kind of down the list, core kind of data center infrastructure services are very popular. The overlay here, though, with a little alert marks there are those that are ranked in the top 10 of services under the most margin pressure. Hardware help desk, server virtualization, storage management, network management services, etc. So today's most profitable are also those where they're having to differentiate around the outside to continue to get that sort of return they're expecting, the annuity margin stream over time from their managed offering. So again, you know, there's some red herrings in this list, I think, like enterprise application management. Now, that could be some companies could consider SharePoint Online an enterprise application management, and that could be as simple as, you know, user provisioning and billing. There's other enterprise-focused MSPs that when you talk to them, enterprise application management is, hey, I've done a custom version of an ERP system, SAP or another, for my client, and I have hosted it for years, and now I'm actually managing it in a managed environment for them. So, you know, down to the application API level. Very different when you talk about application management, but in general, you can see the vast majority of the services today that are under pressure and that are today driving the most profits are heavily infrastructure focused. When you project that forward in terms of services investment for the next 12 to 18 months, sort of here's where it looks like. A little bit more focus on network management, but far and away across all three profiles of MSP, security services have risen to the top of the list. Now, depending on how they're transacting, right, if your primary motion today is resale, that could be as simple as, you know, selling one endpoint security service and another firewall service, right, and just, you know, adding more to their security management resale suite. For others that are seriously into building a, you know, highly compliant security operations center, that can be something very different in terms of investment and threat monitoring and SLA accountability and, you know, a lot of things that it takes to be in the security business today. But nonetheless, they all see it, of course, as a big opportunity, both to satisfy customer need and fear, but also to make incremental revenue and profits. So, you know, I think everyone's coming in it from a little bit of a different vantage point given their legacy business model and what part of the security landscape, which, of course, is very complex today, they're going to tackle. But it is at the top of the feature investment list, as you can see. And you know, there's still some really core infrastructure services that are there, you know, lower in the list, storage management, mobile device management, desktop management, servers, et cetera. So we'll think we'll continue to see a blend going forward, but a shift. So that's the second concept between application and infrastructure focus. So let's talk a little bit about automation. For those of you that have mature managed services communities, I'm sure you hear things like this, particularly those that are smaller in size and looking to scale more effectively. Not only, of course, do they need automation to more effectively bill and provision and renew and manage contracts and so on, but increasingly the automation platform becomes a decision point for which technologies they are going to decide to support, particularly across a wide variety of their customers. There's some other data in the research, full research deck that I didn't have time to bring here today that kind of support this scaling challenge, which speaks to the degree to which the small business MSP allows the customer to customize which brands and the structure of the service that the provider is managing for them versus the enterprise-focused partners who tend to provide a lot more customization. So the high-level message is the small to medium-sized focused providers give very little customization. You know, they have a static offer. It is subscription price. It's with specific brands or technologies, and that's what they support, or they don't engage the customer. Enterprise partners tend to be much more customized, you know, inheriting a number of existing brands of technology, allowing for customization of config, of brand, of even price, depending on the scale of the operation. So it's real different in terms of the kind of pricing and packaging support they may be open to from you. But when you look at how automation plays in their scalability, I'm kind of remiss to tell you that in this particular data set, there still is a high degree of non-automation in place. So we asked the question around whether they use a remote monitoring and management, you know, RMM tool and or a professional services automation tool or both. So some, you know, some platforms are integrated, plenty of tools that are separate, and 40% of them said yes, but 60% of them said no. I think the no's are for different reasons. You know, you can see it cut in the bottom there by orientation of MSP. The enterprise MSPs tend to be much higher on the no front. I don't think that's because they don't have automation. It's because they have built custom scripts. They may have written their own tool. They may have legacy systems management packages that they are just now using in their managed service operation. So you have to sort of get under the covers about what degree they're really automated or not there. But the small business MSPs, of course, will tell you that they couldn't run their operation, literally could not run it unless they had one of these platforms in place, because those most highly valued automation functions over there on the right could not be done without a platform. The good news is for those that have invested in one of these platforms, you know, three-quarters or almost three-quarters feel that that's going to be the differentiator for how they can scale and support the growth of their operations over the next 18 to 24 months. So although it's not cheap, some of these platforms are not cheap, they see it as a very strategic investment. If you then kind of translate that to, well, how important is technology into that single pane of glass management perspective when they're choosing brands? You know, the most important attributes when evaluating the technology or service are there on the right. And, you know, probably not a big surprise that demand for the brand or demand for the service that the technology supports is number one. But look, right behind that is the ability to integrate that technology with their management console. I mean, two-thirds are saying it is important or critical for me to have an API-level integration from the assets I'm managing to my management console, because otherwise I can't get a holistic view of my customer's environment. I can't automate, you know, the other management services I provide, to the point where a number of providers, and they weren't all the small ones, would say, you know, there's very few and far between that I will even consider that don't say they have an integration point to either ConnectWise or Autotask or Kaseya, et cetera. And it's tricky, right, because the channel folks like us don't typically control this issue. It's a product management, an R&D effort, or we're solving this through getting partners MDF money or funds to go write these integration points themselves on a case-by-case basis if the technology doesn't already support it. But it's becoming sort of the next table stake we find in terms of adoption, propensity to adopt, because of how critical these tools are. And I do have a slide that shows kind of the stack-ranked tool, you know, which tools are using today. Continuum and ConnectWise were number one. Kaseya was on the list. SolarWinds Enable on the list. There's a top five that if anyone's interested, we can get to separately. On that note, there's definitely a difference in the customer orientation of the MSP for how willing they are to adopt automation technologies, either as point solutions, you know, a good device monitoring tool, versus a whole platform, you know, like Data or SolarWinds, where there's multiple management functionality across, you know, a wide set of services. So you can see the small business generalists tend to be, they tend to prefer an integrated platform as opposed to best-of-breed tools. Obviously, less people, less moving parts to manage, whereas the enterprise-focused integrators tend to look for sort of best-in-class tool sets, you know, one by one, or for those they already have, adding to the stack they've already invested in. So it's just something for those of you that already write to these integration tools or are in, you know, a services management provider, tool provider, just sort of the orientation of the MSP community based on where they are planning to invest in automation tools. Okay, so let's keep going. So on the last part, maybe the most important, so as we look at their sales and marketing growth plans and their barriers to growth, what do they expect of the vendor community today? And this has certainly been an ongoing dialogue we've had because Managed Service Provider has been around a long time now. How is it evolving? And I'm interested to tell you that this list of both investments and growth barriers, you've kind of overlaid the two, doesn't actually look a lot different than it did 5 years ago, with maybe one notable difference. So the stack ranking here in the bars is the most critical OPEX or CAPEX investments they're planning to make in the next 12 to 18 months. Staffing number one, staffing number two, technical and then sales. you could say, to a lesser degree, an investment in those owned assets we talked about earlier if they're building their own knock or stock. Marketing, fourth on the list, so hopeful that was going to be higher. but when you stack rank these investments with where they see their growth barrier, obviously a high degree of correlation, right? Their number one growth barrier is having the right technical staffing, the right staffing, and with the right skill set. And then to a lesser extent, training and or switching out their sales staff based on the ability to sell an annuity, to have the financial justification conversation, selling to different decision makers than traditional IT, all those things we've been talking about for some time as kind of the next-gen sales process. But what's interesting is although marketing is stated as a priority in the investments list, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't continue to show up as something that is high priority in top three, and it's not perceived to be a barrier, which I think when you talk to many, certainly the mid-market and small focused MSPs, not all of them, but many, it is a huge skills deficit, right? It's kind of like the legacy, you know, VAR challenge, the small VAR challenge we've had for years of can they have the right skills? Can they invest appropriately to differentiate themselves clearly through marketing and do demand gen? Well, if they're coming from a VAR business model, or particularly if they're not, if they're starting more of a cloud orientation, they absolutely need to make marketing a strategic investment. And because of that commoditization on the core infrastructure services, they have to have some unique IP to share in the market, whether it's their vertical expertise or their deep experience around one cloud platform or, right? And a lot of them don't do a good job in clear and sustained marketing differentiation. So we're a little worried this isn't ranked higher, but it is an expectation for funding support and staffing support that you'll see show up in a lot of your MSP programs from the partners that are probably interested. The reference to the staffing is really fascinating. So, you know, small, high-growth partners always have a challenge finding and keeping the right assortment of technical certified staff. But as it relates to managed hybrid environments, which you can see is kind of the default for all sizes of MSPs, there's a huge deficit around skilled talent around the major cloud platform. So this grid on the right is the current ranking of the highest paying IT certifications. It's a regular study that's done by Global Knowledge. And you can see of the top 10, only three of them have a vendor name associated with them. All the rest are process skills, project management skills, compliance and certification around security skills, you know, non-vendor specific stuff. And so of the three that are vendor oriented, two are AWS, solutions architect and developer, and then one is Microsoft. And they're all cloud focused, right? So highest paying certification. So highest paying and smallest community does not bode well for partners to be able, particularly small partners, to be able to recruit these kind of people. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're coming to you with asking for support in, you know, in funded heads, in recruitment monies, in events to go find the right people. You know, if they're balking about the cost of your training and certification program, it's because of the cost for the people themselves. So they're trying to minimize training expense. So that it's a very big challenge for, I'd say, MSPs of all sizes right now, but certainly the smaller guys, to find this kind of hybrid, technically skilled staff that doesn't cost a fortune and will actually want to work for a smaller solution provider. So parlay that into broader sales and marketing requirements. So this is a list of where they need the most help. So the last few is sort of overall investments. This is specific to sales marketing. We hear a big outcry on the left-hand side there for pricing and packaging benchmarking help right here. And some vendors do a really good job at this, looking at services attach rates and length of that average contracts and renewal rates and so on that they benchmark among their MSP community and actively share either at events or on portals or what have you. But there's a big outcry for sort of best practices trends here, which is why companies like these here at the bottom, service leadership, true methods, et cetera, you know, do a really good job doing business mentoring for MSPs and sharing emerging kind of standards in this area. Also in terms of sales methodologies that are helping them, helping MSPs move their customers from on-prem to hybrid and or all cloud environments. So a lot of how do I set up the practice, how do I staff, how do I create sales metrics on the left. On the right, you know, the biggest thing we hear is what I kind of talked about earlier, which is, gosh, I don't transact like a VAR anymore. And I don't own my own assets in most cases, so I've sort of fallen off the radar screen with my leasing vendors, and the MDF models and other ways to get access to marketing support tends to favor the big on-prem integrators or VARs, which is true in many cases. So although they have access in many of your programs to marketing accreditations and trainings and events, the actual funding part tends to be a pretty big gap unless you're selling to them, again, for their own infrastructure. So some vendors have done a really good job creating kind of an incremental pool or a dedicated pool of MDF for emerging services-led partners like this, MSPs, digital integrators, that kind of thing, so that, you know, we don't have the chicken and the egg scenario where they can't get funding, therefore they don't grow, et cetera, et cetera. So something to think about programmatically in terms of your proposal-based MDF rules or the way you're allocating funds at the regional level. So we kind of net this all out here in terms of channel program. Yep.
Oh, can you hear me? Sorry, I just had a quick question about the MDF and the like funded head for working with MSPs. I was curious if you've seen kind of information around like if they're co-funded or if really it's more like is it a 50-50 split or is it really more of a full investment from like, you know, the partner on the vendor side versus like the MSP side. I was curious if you had any insight on that.
For funded heads specifically?
Correct.
I mean, there are certainly trends I feel are best practices around how and when funded heads are an option or when they're part of a kind of mutual investment plan. And I don't know that they're real different for MSPs versus other partner types yet. But I think some of the more effective funded head programs actually lie outside of MDF. They're kind of a separate pool of funds specifically designed for that with governing rules that usually say something like, we'll fund them up to X dollars for the first year. After that, it has to be a co-investment model or a partner, totally partner-led investment model. And then there's kind of defined metrics for, you know, if I fund a sales specialist, here's how they're accountable, XYZ. And if I find, you know, a technical certified head, here's how they're accountable, XYZ. So there's lots of process and rules around how both parties can get a decent return in general that I feel are good best practices. But, frankly, I think the staffing deficit that's the biggest for these MSPs, which, unfortunately, are the hardest guys to get, is kind of what we were talking about earlier, those pre-sales design architect people that are services savvy. But that can also, if need be, kind of do post-sale integration work if it exists. So it's not so much that the funds are not there to fund them. They're just hard to find is what I found. So that's why I think the rules around how long the vendor funds them tend to be shorter because the partner needs to kind of have a little bit more skin in the game to a long-term retention strategy for that role, if that makes sense. So anyway, I may have given you more than you wanted to hear on that topic, but that's what we see. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, great. So let's just tie a bow around it then. So we asked kind of the traditional channel program elements, which are most relevant or not relevant to emerging MSPs. And, you know, let's start with the positive, right? So the high relevance sales and training and certification programs absolutely still very much in demand. I will tell you, however, the nature of those that we found to be most effective for MSPs tend to be shorter in duration, more online, followed up by labs, either virtual labs or face-to-face labs where they can kind of reverse engineer the product, put it in an interoperable, homogenous kind of environment, see how it behaves, look at throughputs, you know, like really practical hands-on stuff. So not so much product feature function, but integration performance, so to speak, in terms of training content that's most of interest to them. But there's still a big demand. You will balk at the price, but you can do creative things, you know, in your MDF programs or performance rebates to help them offset costs of training. One of the biggest things we hear requests for is this number two, which is let me get my hands on the product. And some of that can be addressed with the lab thing, but they almost want to reverse engineer it to see how it's going to perform in their typical customer environment, a switch, an access point, a new storage device, a new firewall, because their tolerance for risk in a managed environment is so much lower because it affects so many more customers more quickly than an on-prem solution might. So through demo programs or NFR or trials or loaners, they're going to increasingly want to get their hands on product, and it may or may not sell through or even be placed in their managed environment. So how that shows up in programs looks a little bit different, but it is a big demand. I think training, demo units, and, of course, one that's didn't come through in the research, but I know it to be a fact of high demand, is priority access to technical support. Like, literally, I need a hotline that I can go right to a level 3 or 4 engineer. I'm not just your average customer. I'm a priority MSP. I can get right to higher-level technicians that know that I've already diagnosed the first 4 issues. And I know that's easier said than done in some of your call routing schemas and that kind of thing, but it is absolutely an expectation, sort of like table stakes, on the support for the MSP community. On the lower relevance, they tend to be much more transactional things. So financing aside for the moment, deal registration and performance rebates are harder to craft intelligently in a managed environment, not impossible, but harder. And just a little less relevant in terms of profitability versus some of these more SG&A-related things here on the left. So, you know, a good deal registration program, no MSP is going to turn away money unless, you know, it doesn't fit with how they deliver the service, but obviously less deal-driven than they used to be. Financing and leasing, yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question about the performance rebates. You said that, you know, the back-end rebates or performance rebates are not so attractive to them, but you mentioned there could be some instances. Do you have examples of what those might look like
that sure.
might be more successful for them?
Yeah, I encourage you to look at some of the cloud providers, either SaaS providers or the cloud infrastructure as a service offers like Microsoft and Google and AWS and even Salesforce.com's structures, but those that are focused on land expand, adopt, renew kind of sales motions are great performance rebates. I mean, they're relevant and attractive to providers. Those that are like focused on how many multi-year contracts have you sold, what's your highest rate of renewal. New business incentives are fine if they're sustained, not like I'm going to have to register every deal because, of course, they're constantly looking at how to add new services and new customers within their environment. But the things that just tend to be more services-centric are the things they're willing to engage in and report to you around in order to obtain those rebates. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, harder to track, for sure, unless you're already selling most of your gear as a vendor in a subscription or a service model. But with a good PRM or automation system, they're willing to report those to you in order to get access to funds, particularly if those funds can be used to, like, maybe 100% offset the cost of training or to get access to incremental demo units or things on the left-hand side that are of high relevance to them. Right, so reinvest over here to give them new support that they may want. So I know I just threw a lot of data at you quickly. This is about half of the data in this particular study. I, when we sort of attempt to tie a bow around this, in general, and it's difficult because every one of you are coming at this with a different technology bent and a different type of ecosystem, so generic advice is nearly impossible. However, we see these being a lot of kind of common challenges and investment considerations from the vendor community. And the first one is maybe so obvious, but I'm amazed how often product marketing teams, corporate marketing teams, R&D teams don't understand how the technology is being used for different types of delivery models and different types of managed service providers, because clearly in this space, one size does not fit all in terms of all MSPs. So continue to educate and look at delivery models, and hopefully research like this will help you continue to raise awareness internally is always, I think, a good investment. We talked about some of the programmatic table stakes in support programs for a MSP community or track. I will tell you, we didn't mention this yet, but utility-based pricing / subscription-based pricing and way they consume the technology from you, even classic traditional hardware, is the number one request we get consistently. It comes through in our annual census. It comes through in this study. It comes through in a variety of other studies that they are expecting to consume the technology in a flat subscription or utility-based model from you, similarly to then how they are going to sell it through. So they don't have to absorb the cost of the capital and wait 2 or 3 years for the return on that over time. It used to be kind of a innovative, you know, offering, and now many, many vendors have it, including the big legacy hardware guys. So it's table stakes, which is why it's listed there under number two. We talked a little bit about kind of the next-gen support expectations that are unique to MSPs, but the staffing challenge is a big deal. So recruitment events, university cultivation work that you might do, cheaper training and certification programs, all going to hit high marks in terms of training and retention of staff there on the bottom. So at a high level, this is sort of where we see the connection between the asks and the program innovations that folks like you would manage. So just something to think about as we kind of close up and move into Q&A here. I would be remiss if I didn't put a shameless plug in for Channelytics, our annual research subscription and insights service. For those of you that are not already subscribers, the full research deck from this study with a lot more detail and some things I didn't get a chance to go through is part of that subscription, along with 7 other tracks of content and other research materials we've done. So Lisa or John Machado can give you details about that and what might be included in that if you're interested. So with that, let me stop chatting and hear what reactions or questions or thoughts you might have. Who else has some comment they'd like to make? Or who's willing and well caffeinated enough to share their comment.
Hi. So this is Jacques here. I guess from my perspective, just a lot to digest, as you said, and to try and align with our business. I think I've made it no secret that I think our MSP model that we're exploring now is a little bit different because it's a little bit more proactive and about engagement to drive forward security around applications. I find it interesting, the alignment with enterprise MSPs and application security, and that they're looking for integrations there. So there's just a lot for me to digest in here and kind of think about how that apply to us. But great presentation. Thank you for this.
I'm glad. Jack, I'm sorry. I should recognize your name. What company are you with?
Oh, with Veracode.
Okay. Yeah, I must say, I'm a bit of a software bigot. I will give you a true confession there, right? I should have at the beginning of this conversation. I'm always a little bit underwhelmed with the amount of investment at the application layer in most of the business modeling stuff we do. I think as software defined becomes more common and standard, and the ease with which custom applications can be deployed and integrated continues to increase all the time. I'm hoping to see that. increase fairly rapidly. I will say that we just finished another study, Jacques. I don't know if you're familiar with it, the state and application development skills in the channel that focused exclusively on this issue. Mark Williams and our team led that, and that is the deliverables around that are becoming available right now, also as part of Channelytics, so that might be of interest to you.
Great. Yeah, no, that is. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Anything in here anyone saw that you just say, wait a minute, that does not jive with our view of the world. That data looks weird. Any comments or thoughts about that?
This is Kristen Smith from Hitachi Ventara. I had asked a few questions along the way, but this is great. I'm excited to get the recording and share it with our team that works with our managed service providers, because I think this will give them some insight and validation on sort of the directions they're heading, or, you know, maybe we'll give them some insight into areas to look at things, you know, slightly different or whatnot. But it's great information. So thank you.
Delighted. Great. Great, great, great. Well, I'm sure you can, after you digest a little bit and get the recording and access to the content, you may have other thoughts. So you can certainly work through Lisa if you want to schedule a kind of follow-on conversation or a little deeper dive into any piece of this that might be helpful to you. So, again, thank you for your time. I know the end of quarter and end of a long week, and appreciate your attention and focus. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Beth.